Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Cryptozoology, strange creatures of the night. What was the Van Meter Visitor with Chad Lewis? Okay, some people receive a dose of this gas or whatever, this memory gas. Do they ultimately retain or regain their memories, or is it one of those situations where something may have happened, but they never remember what?
Well, with Ovi White, the first man hit by this gas, we don't know. He could have remembered a few days later and wrote about it or talked about it, or he could have died without knowing what events took place after it hit him. Again, another comparison to abductees in UFO research is that oftentimes these abductees who have missing time, as they call it, just patches of their memory they can't recall, oftentimes over the years, even months after, little pieces start to come back, whether they're watching a show that reminds them of it, or they're reading a book, or even a dream that will start to piece the memory back, and they'll have these half remembrances and start to piece it together. But as far as we know with this mysterious odor, that did not occur.
So they don't know what could have happened after this struck. Now, about this odorous gas, this amnesia substance or whatever, are there other cases of other monsters where they also have this capability?
Yes, of course there are cases where these monsters release some type of a chemical or gas. Now, many people will draw back to the Mad Gasser of Mattoon case, where this mysterious gas was released and people were getting nauseous and sick. But of course, with the Van Meter, we don't have any accounts of people getting sick, which one of the theories that we looked at was this anything more than mass hysteria? Did somebody see something, a ball of light, and then it just kind of flourished through town over the next week where it turned into this giant bat creatures? And one of the hallmarks or the trademarks of mass hysteria is that people often have a sudden onset of physical ailments that accompany mass hysteria. And outside of the memory wiping, there were no physical ailments. People weren't getting sick. People weren't vomiting. So it really doesn't fall into the mass hysteria in the traditional sense.
Striking that you draw a resemblance or a comparison to UFO abductions, at least in the owl-like creatures that are sometimes seen there. So is it possible, let's just raise that silly question, is it possible at all that this Van Meter creature was not what it appears to be, but something to hide the memory of the real creature or entity or whatever?
Yeah, that's one of the theories out there, and that's getting really bizarre. And one of the areas that I truly enjoy is that maybe it was projecting this ability that other creatures seem to have, that, you know, shapeshifters or skinwalkers or other accounts of these beasts, that they may not actually be what they tend to be. Now, throwing it even further into disarray is the fact that many townsfolk today in Van Meter believe that the creature wasn't some type of bat, but it was the devil itself that was coming up from the mines or from hell, that they thought it was a demon or a devil based on the account. So we're spanning the entire spectrum of what various things this thing could be.
Okay, that raises more of a religious kind of specter, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And we can assume that the people of 1903 held religion very close at that time. There were several churches that were in operation, that are still in operation in Van Meter. So we know these people probably would have looked at it as a hideous sign of something that was not good for the community. And I bet many of them did think it was a demon or the devil.
Any indication of how this was taken in a spiritual sense? Were there any blessings, or was there any mention of clerics or priests or ministers becoming involved to either work on getting rid of the creatures or administering to the people, who obviously would be a little freaked out, I would imagine. Do we have any indication that the liturgy was involved?
Not that we know of. Again, it probably happened, and that's an excellent point. But what I found truly fascinating is that the newspaper doesn't talk about any spiritual leaders or religious leaders. what it talks about is the townsfolk went to the men of science. They went to the local principal, who was thought to be one of the most highly educated people in Iowa, and he called it an antediluvian, this creature of, you know, early times, this ancient beast that walked the earth. So instead of turning to the church, they simply turned to science, which was a bit unheard of back then.
Kind of sounds like a Lovecraft short story or something.
Yeah, one of the things is that many people said this had to have been a hoax. It's just too bizarre that, but it was touching on things that would come into UFO research and folklore 60 years later. So if this was created by the author of the original news article, he was way ahead of his time and should have been writing movies or radio or something, because he was a fascinating teller of scary tales, where I've had many people say, this really should be a movie because it's just that bizarre.
Well, they made the Mothman Prophecies into a movie, although it was of mixed quality and mixed success. But since the question's raised here, now, in the case of the Mothman in West Virginia, its appearance seemed to almost predict or herald the crash of the Silver Bridge. Was there a bridge or any other natural disaster involved in this part of Iowa?
Because of the similarities with the Mothman reportings, that was one of the things we started looking for, is tragedies, mishaps, misfortunes, either prior or directly after the sightings of the visitor. And we were unable to find them. The town did burn down, but that was nearly a decade after the last reported sighting of these creatures. And we don't know if these creatures remained in the mine for days or decades, or if they found another escape and they went to West Virginia or somewhere else. We don't know, but that was one of the correlations we wanted to look at, is that this evidence of tragedy that we just were unable to find as of yet.
Now, even assuming that somebody made up some of this story, that the details of something were embellished, how does one get to the core event? Because that makes it all the more complicated.
And it was complicated, because the day after this appeared in one of the Des Moines newspaper, it was reported the next day in a rival paper, where they said these reports were happening, but they were greatly exaggerated. They didn't go into detail. They said, yes, people have seen mysterious lights. Yes, the banker did shoot out the front window of his bank, shooting at some winged figure, but yet they're still embellished. So we have that, too, that threw a little cold water on this case. That was it somebody in town who was upset with all the attention that the town was getting, or was it really something that was embellished? And, again, this is just one of the numerous unanswered questions we have about this case.
But they haven't made a tourist attraction. It's not like Roswell, New Mexico, or Aztec, New Mexico. They're not saying Van Meter, home of the visitor.
That's exactly true. They've never done that. In fact, unfortunately, when you go there, there won't be anything to remind you of the creature. Now, that's changing now that the books come out. But before, when we went there, there were no cutouts of the monster, the visitor, where you could put your head in there. There was no Mothman statue like there is in Point Pleasant. There were no billboards and murals of the creature. It was really, if it wasn't forgotten, it was simply brushed off. So that was another indication that the people of Van Meter in 1903 wanted nothing to do with this story getting out. They weren't looking at it to draw tourists in, much like in my home state of Wisconsin when they came up with the Hodag, this mystical beast that terrorized the Northwoods Forest. That was put together to draw tourists in, where that wasn't the case in Van Meter.
Ouch. Well, at least it's promising anyway that they're trying to do something.
Yeah, I bet you the visitor center could really be looking impressive if they did a number on the Van Meter visitor. They could dress up the helpers in there in, like, bat costumes or something.
I'll tell you what, you're giving them some ideas, Chris. We have Chad Lewis joining us with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Making the right decisions is a challenge to investors. Are we going to see economic growth, slide into a recession, or at worst, depression? Hi, Ted Anderson from Midas Resources. We all know when a company acts irresponsibly, divesting ourselves in a move towards safety is prudent. When the market becomes volatile, U.S. treasuries are a safe haven. But what do you do when the U.S. government overextends itself and spends beyond its means? Many investors are turning toward gold as a common sense alternative to traditional paper investments. Midas Resources has put together a powerful book titled 10 Reasons to Own Gold, discussing costs, benefits, risks, featuring full-color illustrations, weights, and measures. The book is free and can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. Paper investments are dwarfed by gold's 6,000-year history. Discover how gold may be right for you and your IRA by calling 800-686-2237. Whether buying or it's time for you to sell, the book is free. Call 800-686-2237.
It's hurricane and wildfire season again. Why do thousands of people sit in these reoccurring problem areas year after year, betting their lives that the disaster won't get them? Hundreds of you help eFoods Direct ship 50,000 donated meals to the Oklahoma victims. The problem is we can't help everybody. If every one of us who can will take care of ourselves, we can all pitch in to take care of those who really can't. The new just-in-case pack from eFoods Direct is the big brother to the 7-day emergency pack designed for Oklahoma disaster donations. It contains a 2-month supply for one person, or a 1-month supply for two adults, or a 2-week supply for a family of four. The $320 price is $50 less than retail. Call 800-409-5633 on the web eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. Order two or more, get 10% off, free shipping applies. Call 800-409-5633 on the web eFoodsDirect.com/Alex.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy free, contains all natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraganiX.com, Terraganics.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
That sounds like a voice you'd use for the Paracast, Chris. I don't want to say any more about it.
Good one, Gene.
Okay. Well, that was good. You like that, huh? You can write that down. The Van Meter Visitor is this very fascinating book. Chad Lewis, one of the co-authors. Now, in going out there, doing your research, Chad, did you feel you encountered evidence of a genuine event, or is that jury still out?
As I said before, when I first got this case, I thought this is going to be a lot of fun, but it's going to be short. We're going to solve this within a couple days. It'll be no problem. It was either a practical joke or a hoaxster or something that was going on that wasn't this creature. But as we dug deeper and deeper into this case, we were left with more questions than answers. And we started ruling out some of these possibilities of people saying that it was a robber, that it really was somebody trying to rob the bank and the hardware store and such. But on several different nights, people shot at this thing. Whether you're the most diehard robber in the world, I would assume that after several nights in a row of getting shot at by shotguns with buckshot and immense proportioned guns, that you would probably go to another town to start robbing. So that and many other things led me to believe that it wasn't a practical joke or a robber that was causing this. It had to be something else. Now, what that something else is, that's the million-dollar question.
Yeah, some questionable mushroom soup possibly in the diner.
Yeah, that's one of the things we looked at, again, that maybe this was all just people going out of their way to create this mass hysteria in a sense. And that's something you can never rule out until, you know, we have somebody's diary of it or their journal that pinpoints it directly. Or I would assume somebody took a picture of the bank's front window that was shot out by the terrified bank teller as he tried to protect the town's money from this creature. So until those things find their way to us, we might just never know.
Yeah. Who knows? It could have been an outbreak of rye ergot poisoning, and maybe somebody had bad rye bread in the morning, and then, boom, they got hit with all kinds of psychedelic images. I mean, anything's possible. I mean, that happened in the 50s in France, where a whole town was poisoned by naturally occurring LSD on rye mold. So, you know, I'm not saying that's what happened here, but you can't rule anything out or anything in until you've done as much research and digging as possible. Speaking of digging, have there ever been any sort of indications that the mine was ever explored by people of the time or later on? I have someone here on the Paracast forum at forum.theparacast.com who's volunteering to do some spelunking to go look for these things. Maybe they're still down there and they have another way out.
That's exactly what we thought. Now, the owner of the land, his family has owned it for a long time. He's an older gentleman, and he's one of those stereotypical farmer ranchers, this no-nonsense type of guy that you wouldn't think would get spooked by anything. So when he took us on a private tour of the land, you know, I don't think he even believes the story, but he did tell us that when he was a kid, him and his relatives were afraid of playing around the old mine where it once was, and he had no idea why he was frightened by this. Just he picked up a sense that something wasn't right about this, and they didn't want to play there. And again, this threw me back because I had no idea that, again, he would be spooked by anything. He was that farmer that looked like he had seen everything in life. And I asked him what he thought about opening it up and going down there. And he was interested not only to see if the creatures were still there, but what other remnants were still down there. Did they still have some of these carts and buggies that were down there, all the old mining equipment? I think if he ever got the insurance to open it up, he'd be game for that.
Just be careful if you enter a room and there's all these pods on the ground that are starting to open up. You might get a face sucker like an alien.
Yeah, that's time to retreat then as well. Do what the rest of the Van Meter people did and just retreat into the safety of the building.
How long did this mine survive?
It went another decade about. Nobody quite is sure. Again, back then, this small town, unlike any other place I've investigated, simply did not have a lot of records. It's almost as though they were trying to get rid of the town history. Maybe that's part of the whole conspiracy theory that they wanted to get rid of this case or never talk about it, so they didn't write it down. But we do have one piece of evidence that would make us think that it wasn't all imaginary, that the night at 1 a.m. when the bank manager shot out the front window, the next morning he was expecting to go out to find the body of this burglar or the creature, or at least some blood or some feathers, something that would indicate that he had shot something of flesh and blood. But he found nothing. But as he searched around his building, he found a series of these giant three-toed claws in the dirt. And he actually made a plaster cast, at least one that we know of, of these three-toed footprints or claw prints. But what happened to that plaster cast, we don't know. I always like to say it might be in one of your listeners' attics right now.
I can't wait. Well, if we have any listeners in Van Meter, Iowa, tell us what's going on.
Maybe you have a grandma and grandfather that lived there 110 years ago. Check the attic and, wait, wouldn't it be neat to uncover that? Of course, it'd be difficult to authenticate it, but, give us a little bit more of a sense. I mean, you mentioned the article said the townspeople gathered almost like chasing the monster Frankenstein with torches and pitchforks and stuff. But do we have a sense of how many people actually were rallied out there to go and confront this creature? Do we have a sense of the mood of the crowd? I mean, obviously, if you're really in fear of something, you're not going to go out and try to track it down, even with another group of people. Do you have a sense? Have you gotten any additional information besides the original news account?
Yes, we know that directly next door to the old mine was a very highly operable and highly profitable brick and tile factory that employed dozens and dozens of men around the clock to make these bricks and tiles. And when they went out to the old mine, we assume that most of them had gathered. They had talked about a posse in the dozens. It may have reached close to 100. We don't know, but it was at least several dozen of these people. And I think the image you bring up about the townsfolk, you know, with the torches and pitchforks was very apt here, that I think the townsfolk by this time, they were fed up with this creature. It had been terrorizing their town piece by piece throughout the week, where even though they were deadly afraid of it, they had no choice but to gather around. In 1903, you couldn't call for backup. Nobody was going to come and protect you. And I think that's what these men were doing, trying to protect their families. And they said, if this creature, instead of it just coming in night after night, let's go out and meet it head on and face the consequences.
So maybe those scenes we saw in the old Frankenstein movies where the mob is out with the fire and the torches and the knives and the guns in search of the vicious creature, well, they were based on things that really happened in small towns across the world. You never know. The book is The Van Meter Visitor, and our guest is Chad Lewis, one of the co-authors, who wrote actually most of the articles in the book. With Gene and Chris, you're in
The Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's L-E-M-K-E Soft.com. LemkeSoft.com. L-E-M-K-E Soft.com.
Got a simple question for you. Can you sell?
Yes?
Okay.
Can you sell the intangible?
If yes, and you'd like to work 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, with no overtime, no weekends, if you're passionate about not closing sales, but about opening relationships, if you truly have a desire to serve global clients who need your advertising expertise, and you're local to the Twin Cities and Burnsville, are hardworking, self-driven, with experience in sales, marketing, or advertising, are personable and a whiz on the phone, GCN wants to talk with you right now. GCN, the Genesis Communications Network, is one of the largest
largest independent talk radio networks in the world, and we're hiring right now. We offer benefits and an excellent commission structure. Experience preferred, but we'll train the right person. Is that you? Submit your resume today to advertise@gcnlive.com. Again, that's advertise@gcnlive.com. Come work with the Genesis Communications Network, an equal opportunity employer.
Hey, all you Dead Doctors Don't Lie fans, this is Justin Baker. If you missed the Doc Wallach seminar in January right here in Santa Cruz, then now is your chance to see him again. Dr. Wallach is going to be doing a Central California health tour the first weekend in September 2013. You'll have four opportunities to attend his world-renowned health lecture, which is helping people from around the globe reverse disease. Doc will be at the Pacific Cultural Center at 1307 Seabright Avenue in Santa Cruz on Tuesday, September 3rd. The doors open at 6:30 p.m. On Wednesday, September 4th at 6:30 p.m., we will be in Modesto at Soul Harvest Worship Center, 4718 Greenleaf Court, followed by two lectures on Thursday, September 5th at 10:30 a.m. at Mosswood Park Great Hall at 3612 Webster Street in Oakland. And the last event of the health tour will be in Sacramento the evening of September 5th at 6:30 p.m. at the Church of Scientology at 1007 6th Street. Don't miss these life-changing events. Seating is limited, so contact me today at 831-331-9523. That's 831-331-9523 to reserve your free VIP seats.
Ceramic body armor is rated to stop six hits. But what about the seventh? Unlike ceramic or Kevlar, Infidel body armor is proven to take hit after hit, and it just won't quit. Reasonably priced and designed for the smart civilian prepper, Infidel stops hundreds of hits from small arms to high-powered rifles. That means safety and peace of mind. Buy yours at InfidelBodyArmor.com. Spelled I-N-F-I-D-E-L BodyArmor.com. Infidel body armor just won't quit.
Can you pluck a chicken in about 90 seconds? You can with Power Plucker. Plucking by hand is a chore, but the Power Plucker makes it fast and easy. Simply chuck Power Plucker into your power drill and watch those feathers fly off. Save time and money with our complete home processing kits, too. For free USA shipping and 10% discount, go to PowerPlucker.com and enter promo code RADIO. PowerPlucker.com, the only drill-powered poultry plucker.
This is Kurt Sutton, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
Now, we have Chad Lewis, co-author of The Van Meter Visitor, joining Gene and Chris. A little segue from our discussion, and we'll get back to the monsters. You've been studying paranormal events for a number of years. Tell us more about your background in research and why you got involved in the first place. Personal encounters?
I wish. Yes, I've been researching the strange and unusual for a little over 20 years now, and I blame it on my home state of Wisconsin, because I grew up in a town not too far from one of the three UFO capitals of the world that we have in our state. We have three cities that all claim to be the UFO capital of the world. So when I was in high school, I started traveling to Elmwood, Wisconsin, to hear what these people were seeing, why dozens upon dozens of people were seeing mysterious lights and crafts in the sky. So I started talking with them and interviewing these witnesses, and this was national news back then. So when I started studying psychology at the university, I was really interested in why certain people believe in the strange and unusual when others do not. And I started presenting as an undergraduate this research at research symposiums, and it was at that time very statistical based stuff, very boring. You're glad you weren't there. But people in the audience would come up afterward and say, I know this isn't quite what you're doing, but I think my home's haunted, or I saw something in the woods I can't explain. Could you help me investigate? And back then, not a lot of people were doing it. So I said, sure, I'll help you out. And that kind of just spiraled from there. And when I started graduate school, I actually was able to do my master's thesis looking at students' beliefs in the paranormal.
Oh, that's interesting. Tell me more about your day experience. You have a day job, we assume. You don't go around all over the country just looking at paranormal events. You're not like Chris or me.
Yeah, actually, when I finished grad school, I had a real career, I call it, where I was doing grant writing for a nonprofit, and that's when we started doing these road guides, a co-author and myself, to haunted places. We started with our state of Wisconsin, that basically roadmaps on how to get to these places, what to expect, sorting the fact from fiction. And it basically started branching out to other states where Minnesota, Iowa, South Dakota, where it got to be so much travel that I had to say, well, I have to do one or the other. So about 6 years ago, I decided that I was going to just travel the world looking for these creatures and then write about them and lecture on them. So that's what I've been doing for the last 6 years exclusively. And I always say maybe I'll get back to a real career someday, but this is just too bizarre right now.
So it did become your day job.
Yes, not by, you know, choice, almost just out of sheer luck, lucky fortune, if you will, that, you know, when I was in grad school, I never thought that this would be something that you could pursue on a daily basis. I thought it would be something people contact you. Yes, it's fun to investigate these things, but like 99% of the field, you would have a career and this would be your second career.
You do other stuff during the day. You'd be a psychologist. You'd be a teacher. You'd be a bricklayer, whatever. And then you'd chase flying saucers. Or some of us were reporters like myself. And another person, I don't know if you've ever heard of him, Kurt Southerly, who's done a lot of investigations in Pennsylvania. And right now he's actually a public information person for, I think, the Air Force, if he still has the job. But he worked for a daily newspaper. He was a freelance writer. And I was a broadcast journalist, and that's how I got involved in chasing strange creatures. So there you go. So they're not after you yet, Jared, are they?
No.
What would you do if you saw something like this? Do you have equipment with you when you go on these trips to do research, just in case something weird happens?
Yes, that was one of the things that we debated to no end of, you know, did we have the same weapon hubris that they had, that we thought if we brought our weapons and modern equipment and technology, we would be able to capture it, kill it, document it, etc. Like they did. They thought, oh, we have a shotgun with blasting, you know, with the pellets. We have high rifles and pistols that we'll be able to kill it. So we thought the same thing, but we brought traditional weapons and then untraditional weapons, more of the new age, if you will, that some of the people that came with us wanted to be smudged with a sage and other protectants. So I think we tried to cover the whole spectrum of both supernatural type weapons that some of the people that we brought with us put some belief in, and then also your traditional guns, knives, weapons of that nature.
Do you subscribe to the theory that there are indeed window or portal areas or anomalies, to use what they say on two certain TV shows, where strange creatures or anything, even UFOs, can wink in and wink out from one reality to another?
Yeah, that was one of the theories that we looked at, not only with the visitor, but other cases, that there just seems to be so much happening and no residual evidence left behind, that maybe these things, you know, as they're known as ultra-terrestrials or interdimensional or tulpas, we don't know, but I certainly lean to that possibility. Whenever I'm asked, you know, what research or methods do you try to use and what do you stay away from, I always say when you're dealing with the weird, what's too weird? That people always say, oh, you shouldn't be using that method. Well, what if it works? We don't know. Again, I'm left with more questions than answers on a lot of these things.
Yeah, so it's like having a weird ratio.
Well, I always have loved the Hunter S. Thompson adage that it, when the going gets weird, the weird turn pro.
Yeah. A colleague of mine, Rick Hendricks, always says when you go looking for the weird comes looking for you.
Boy, do I know about that.
Okay, so let's look further into your explorations here. Any other really fascinating cases in Van Meter? Obviously, there were other things being seen, but can you focus on anything that they had that was anything near as weird as this one?
Again, not that we know of. This was definitely the weirdest thing they had ever encountered. And if there were UFO sightings at the same exact time of this creature outside of this ball of light, maybe it was the creature because it could produce the light. Maybe it was a craft of some sort or just a, you know, will-o'-the-wisp type light. We don't know. But outside of that, we don't know of other strange things happening. We don't know if anyone else was reporting strange dreams or possession or anything else. Again, until some of this surfaces, all we have to go on were the original newspaper accounts. We can speculate, but that's all it is.
How about 5 or 6 years before? What was the closest great airship sighting to the Des Moines area?
The late 1800s, the 1896-97 flap of these airships that, you know, really were reported all over the U.S. And then it continued on. We have some from 1905, 1906 from that area, not only Des Moines, but Iowa City and Fort Dodge area. So they were all over. Of course, we have to remember that the early 1900s was the time of the spiritualist movement was really at full force then of, you know, the belief that people could communicate with the deceased through seances and other means, where people would get together on weekends and have these seances and try to connect with their loved ones. And this was also a time when science was just starting to really gather steam. And what I mean by that is when people heard of an 8-foot giant bat creature in their backyards of Van Meter, they were also reading about the mountain gorilla being discovered. So they probably thought to themselves, well, I don't think it's that weird that there's a giant bat here. There's a giant gorilla in the jungles. You know, what's the difference? So I think they may have taken it with more a harder look at it being credible than we do today.
It sounded like they would accept it as something that just sort of happens. Really weird. The book is called The Van Meter Visitor, A True and Mysterious Encounter with the Unknown. Certainly, if it happened to me, if I saw that, I'd be moving very, very fast in the other direction. Chad Lewis continues. We'll have more questions from our listeners coming up. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Micro Plant Powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with Micro Plant Powder. Order today at 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org.
For over 5 years, you've been hearing about the Berkey guy, so you may know a few things about him. For example, you are well aware of the superior quality and effectiveness of Berkey water filters and accessories. But did you know the Berkeys have had independent lab tests done to prove just how effective they are? It's true, and he can email you the test results. Just visit GoBerkey.com. You may also know that the Berkey guy has helped tens of thousands of people get better prepared. Now here's something you may not know. GoBerkey.com has amazing specials and deals all the time on a wide variety of survival and preparedness products, most ready to ship same day. Visit the Berkey Guy at GoBerkey.com and be sure to click the red Products on Sale Now button. You can always call toll-free 877-886-3653. Again, that's 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com, home of the Berkey Guy.
Hello, it's Tom Chenault from The Tom Chenault Show. We are experts in home-based business and residual income. We show people how to make money from their home, either part-time or full-time. And in partnership with Genesis Communication Network, we've organized a team to fight back about people not having money, time, or health. And we need your help. What we want you to do is, if you've got an interest in building an organization to fight back against people taking our money, taking our time, and taking our health, we want to talk to you. All you need to do is call this number, 855-308-8326. Again, all you want to do is call 855-308-8326. You can make a tremendous amount of money and end up fighting for a great cause. Please call us right now.
Hi, my name is Richard Dolan. You're listening to the Paracast.
This is a fast-moving evening with Chad Lewis joining us for the first time on the PowerCast to talk about the Van Meter Visitor. Chris, there were some questions. We didn't have a lot of time to post them from our listeners about his research. Can you dig up a few?
Yeah, we've addressed a few, but there's one. You mentioned the Mad Gasser of Mattoon. That has always fascinated me. And I do have a question here from one of our participants at forum.theparacast.com. This one comes from one of our newest signees, Le Bombette, who has 24 posts here at the Paracast forum. Any chance this creature might have been something akin to Spring-Heeled Jack or Perak, the Spring Man of Prague? Spring-Heeled Jack and Perak were human-like creatures that wore what was possibly a costume and seem to have superhuman abilities. Also, she notes, the strange smell that disoriented witnesses and the wave of sightings is a bit reminiscent of the Mad Gasser of Mattoon. You did mention that before, but let's readdress some of the similarities between the two cases, even though obviously she points out they were separated by many years.
Yeah, and I find that interesting with the Mad Gasser and Spring-Heeled Jack, that people said it may have been a human dressed up in costume or trying to portray itself as more terrifying and frightening, you know, so people weren't able to identify it. And that's certainly a possibility here, but as far as we know, those who saw it were convinced that it wasn't human, at least not completely. They described it as half human, half animal, and it, you know, the Spring-Heeled Jack, many of the illustrations of what it was thought to be had these wing-like things to it, but they almost seem like cloth or something man-made, whereas this creature, by all accounts, seemed to be, you know, a flesh-and-blood creature, whether it was in a giant owl or a whooping crane or a pelican or something else. People believe that it was an animal, not a person, but with the Mad Gasser of Mattoon, of course, the gas is a similarity, the odor, but that's about it. Even though people did claim in Mattoon that this creature was able to move at great speeds that a human would have difficulty to replicate, and that was the same with the visitor. When it moved like a very fast kangaroo. You know, very, very similar to what chupacabra sightings have detailed.
Just in passing, I note, Chris, that our listener is a museum professional.
Ah, oh yeah, look at that. I wasn't scrolled down far enough.
We just added the capability, by the way, if you want to post your occupation, you don't have to, at forum.theparacast.com. You can do it. So she might have a singular knowledge.
Yeah, you mentioned, Chad, you mentioned chupacabra. There was a very interesting case where two law enforcement officers in Puerto Rico responded to a chupacabra sighting. This was fairly early on in the wave, and one of the officers felt that he was being hypnotized or mesmerized by, if I remember correctly, a red light and then a smell, very reminiscent of the visitor.
Yeah, a lot of people report that with the chupacabra. I actually chased the reports of the chupacabra down through Central America. And when I was in Puerto Rico, I talked to a rancher who had seen it several days before I got there. And he told me one evening he heard his dog fighting with something in the backyard. And in Puerto Rico, they don't have any large predators, so he wasn't afraid of the dog being harmed. But then the dog let out a yelp that he had never heard before. He went back and saw what he reported as El Chupacabra, and he said it bounced as though much like a kangaroo. It flew into the woods and disappeared, and when he went out there, the dog was dead. And what struck me about that is when I was researching the visitor is that that same movement of that kangaroo, that this creature was, you know, not quite stable on its feet. It kind of hopped and leapt, if you will.
Interesting. I note here that one of our listeners who posted in the forums, his or her name is Black Rock Lobster, says, I will be eager to volunteer in any underground investigation. Are those famous last words?
Yeah, I think you guys are onto something where if they open up this mine, it may be one of the best tourist attractions in the U.S.
Careful what you wish for.
Have you talked to anybody there saying, hey, why don't you do this? This would be cool.
Yes, they're starting. As I mentioned, they really have nothing about this case because most of the town
has
forgotten about it. But now it's starting to open up where they're going to have visitor days every year during the anniversary of the sighting. They're going to look at tours out to the old mine, but eventually maybe it will open up. That would be wonderful. And I think as your listeners have shown, there'd be no shortage of volunteers.
Yeah, come visit the visitor.
And we hope, of course, that the people who do volunteer understand they will probably have to sign some kind of clause saying that the powers that be who allow this expedition to continue are indemnified from damages if they disappear.
Yes, and I think if you die, they should give the refund to your family.
I can dig that, you know. So what would you charge? I mean, really, what would you charge for an expedition like this? $55 a person or something?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that would be great. I talked to the landowner of even putting a sign up or a plaque by the mine and just allowing people to come out there and donate if they want to check it out because it's really a ranch. There are a few wandering horses, but they're not farming it because the land's pretty much unusable because it's filled with these little pieces and trinkets of the brick and tiles from the decades of the factory. So you can't grow anything there, so why not open it up?
In terms of mines, are there a number of mines in that part of the state?
Yes, people really are surprised to hear that Iowa was a large coal producer, but they were putting out tons just out of the Van Meter mine. Tons a day were being shipped out on the trains. And what I found very interesting about this case is that this was in an abandoned coal mine. And when you start researching into folklore of whether it's the Mothman or some of these other places, that we find a lot of times these abandoned places are where these creatures like to hang out and inhabit. That whether it's the old bombing shelters, whether it's old factories that have been abandoned, these are areas where these monsters seem to really enjoy.
Well, also naturally occurring cavern systems, too. We've seen some correlations and parallels between incidents of Bigfoot reports and you know, natural cavern systems.
And what a perfect hiding spot, especially the mines of Van Meter, where, as I said, there were miles upon miles of these caverns going through the underground, leading all over. They may have had numerous entrances and exits.
I don't want to go. I've been thinking about it.
You're not good underground, huh, Gene?
I don't work underground. Now, understand, I spent years riding the subway trains in New York, as you did, Chris. So I'm used to that kind of underground. But I'm not used to the underground where you go into the cave and you wonder about it. You know, part of it is that I knew Richard Shaver many years ago. And, of course, the legends about the Dero and the Tiro and the underground caverns. And the legend of this, they call it the Dero elevator. Ever hear of that?
I haven't, no.
All right. Chris, you never heard of the Dero elevator in New York City?
Okay. Gene, that's a good one. Why don't you share with us?
I will share with you. Okay. In one or more high-rises in New York, there was allegedly an elevator where if you push the basement button twice, the elevator starts moving in a different direction and takes you to a place that you do not want to visit, to the caverns. That's why we call it a Dero elevator. I think that story came originally from John J. Robinson, who some of you recall when we were playing some of the old recordings of Bob Zanotti's Coffee Clock Show. John Robinson was a friend of mine, a friend of Jim Moseley, and he knew this guy during World War II, a guy named Steve Brody, an artist who claimed to have been kidnapped by Deros and to have spent a number of years there captive. So John is where I got the Dero elevator thing.
Did they abduct him as breeding stock? Or
if you recall the show, his remembrance of it is that Steve Brody lived in a rooming house that Jack lived shortly after he broke up with his first wife. And after a while, Brody disappeared. And then he heard from a friend of his who saw Brody out west, apparently in a trance, as if they, the Deros, whatever, had taken control over him again. He never saw him again, so we don't know what happened to Steve Brody. But if his descendants are listening to the PowerCast, we'd like to know. Although we're talking about somebody who must have been in his 30s or 40s back in the 1940s. So I don't know who would still be alive, who would remember him. You never know. The book is called The Van Meter Visitor. And I don't know how this segues to elevators in New York that go in the wrong direction and take you to the Dero Caves. The author, by the way, is Chad Lewis. Much more to come. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the PowerCast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Alabama, it's coming, and it's the event you and your family will not want to miss. The Southern Preppers Convention and Green Living Expo, Saturday and Sunday, September 7th and 8th, at the newly renovated Oxford Civic Center in Oxford, Alabama, where admission is totally free. There's something for everyone. Free classes and seminars on topics like food preparation, food harvesting, and food preservation. Free giveaways every 30 minutes. You could win seed kits, food, doTERRA oil, starter kits, water filters, and more, including a year's supply of food. Guest speakers include Bob from Black Dog Survival School, Mike from White Harvest Seeds, Dr. Tom Stoner from Dr. Med Kits, and more. And be sure to stop by and check out the Youngevity booth, the Southern Preppers Convention and Green Living Expo, September 7th and 8th, a weekend of education and preparation that's totally free to attend. Don't forget, the Country Inn and Suites in Oxford has special rates available for those who attend the expo. Get all the details at thesouthernpreppers.com. That's thesouthernpreppers.com.